Good morning and happy Mother's Day. If you have not said happy Mother's Day to a mom, yours, someone else's, find a way to do it before the day's over. This is not a Hallmark moment. This is just a kind and respectful one. My mom doesn't know who I am anymore. She's had Alzheimer's now for a while. But I'm looking forward to a day where both of us will finally be in our right minds, and we can sit down and talk about what really matters. There'll be a day that comes. It will just be on the other side of eternity. Anyway, so thinking about my mom, I was talking with an attorney that was doing some work on behalf of mom. My sister and I are her representatives, trustees, and that kind of thing. And so when I was talking to the attorney, when we finished, and he said, what are you speaking on this weekend? He knows I'm a pastor. And he just asked it very matter-of-factly, and I just didn't want to answer it. I was just a little embarrassed. And I said, well, we're doing this series on the five love languages. Even when I say it now, I feel a little bit sheepish. I'm really glad we're doing it, but it didn't come naturally. And again, I'm not apologizing for the series. I just felt a little awkward with this guy. And five love languages? Oh, I know those. And he went through the whole list, you know, acts of service, you know, quality time, gifts, physical touch. And he goes, and words of affirmation. That's not mine, which I knew that. He said, but apparently all these people in my office, that is theirs. I'm having to figure that one out, which is the whole point of this series. We need to understand the people. It doesn't matter what mine is so much as me understanding what the people around me, how they experience love, what matters to them. So anyway, so our attorney, I'm not going to be sending him kind notes. I will send him checks, but not kind notes. But again, the whole purpose of doing this series has been so that we can find ways where we can, in a very practical way, in a genuine way, in a connecting way, love people around us. That's our responsibility. Those of us that are followers of Jesus, that's a mandate we've been given. Love God, love our neighbor. And our neighbor is anyone in my sphere of influence. So we're trying to figure this out. Dr. Gary Chapman wrote this book, Five Love Languages, in 92. It sold 20 million copies, not because of a great marketing plan, but because of what he had picked up in his counseling. It really does fit with the way people are. There are colleges that teach this. There are psychologists that are using this regularly because it just fits human nature. So, and it's very biblical. I think you'll see that as we continue to walk through the series. We're doing one today that is probably the least understood, and that's this receiving gifts. The moment we hear that, we're thinking, oh no, it's just one of those shameless plugs for people to go buy stuff. You know, I still don't understand at Christmas time. Maybe a lot of people do this. But they ever, you know, if you really love someone, get them a new Mercedes. No one's ever gotten me one. I don't understand. But the gift-giving thing, and we're used to hearing people doing it because of bribery or they're trying to get, it's completely misunderstood. Hopefully by the end of today, we'll know it better. This idea of giving, though, is essential to the Christian faith. The most famous verse in the Bible, the one that people that don't even know anything really about the Bible, they know this one verse. For God loved the world so much that he gave his only son. God gave the greatest gift ever so that anyone that believed in him would not perish but have eternal life. He gave a gift to those that were the least deserving, you and me. And he did it because he loved us and cared about us. So when we're thinking about this idea of giving gifts, let's start with God, the great gift giver, and then think about, so what does that say to me? What's my responsibility here to the people in my circle, my sphere of influence? God gives gifts to show his love for us. We should do the same thing. We should follow his example. So I'm going to give you a couple of illustrations. This receiving gifts is not one of my top ones, but I do understand it. I'm going to show you a few gifts I've been given over the years. One is, this is a picture. If you ever come to my office, you'd see this on my desk. It says, "He is risen." I was given this by Ellie Schleyer two Easters ago. I absolutely love it. Ellie is a super encourager. She does pictures like this. This was a she did it with her thumb. I'm not going to get into how she did it, but I deeply appreciate it. In fact, after the 9 o'clock service, she gave me a few more that are in my bag. It didn't cost her anything financially, but it is priceless to me. I got another one here. This is, if you come to my office, you'll see this pen. This is a pen. It's a hand-carved out of wood. Ken Wood made this for me. Ken and I were great friends. And Ken passed away from cancer last year. I keep this on my desk as a reminder. When he gave it to me, I was blown away because it took some work to do this, and it was an expression of friendship, and I love it. I have this one here. I have this at my office at home. Now, this is a picture. My daughter Sarah was up here singing a minute ago. She doesn't look like this anymore, but she did when she was a year old. And Becky gave me these two pictures. The captions are, one of them says, "I'm thinking of you today," and the other is, "I'll be home soon." Becky had, after Sarah was born, she traveled back east to see her family. I stayed and worked, and she had these hidden in the house so I'd find them. And every office I've had, this goes with me. Didn't cost her much, but it's been priceless on my end. And then I have one more. I'm going to set it up with this video. Katie, let's see this. I love watching the. Everywhere I go and I see one, I want to stop the car. I don't understand. In West Virginia, we didn't have them. So for Christmas this year, my daughter got me this. It's a miniature version. I use this a lot at the house. If Becky's feeling a little discouraged or something, I just pull out Tube Man, and it makes her mad that she's laughing when I do it. But anyway, in fact, the rest of the service, we're just going to watch this guy. I'm pretty sure this didn't cost a lot, but it makes me laugh every time I see it. So anyway, that's kind of the nature of gifts is, it's not a matter of price or anything like that, but it's an expression of love. And it shows that some attention was paid to the person that it's given to. The gifts are assembled. So I'm going to, when Becky knew I was doing this message, she said, "You're going to do a whole message on receiving gifts." And I said, "Yes. Let's see how I do." I'm using the Bible to back all this up, this idea of gift giving. Some of you are thinking, "I think that's kind of hokey." You know what we tend to do? This is free. It's not in the notes. We tend to devalue love languages that aren't our particular one. Like last week after the service, someone came up and they were talking about a story I'd told. And then I said, "Well, what's your love language?" Again, that seems weird for me to say. I'm having to get over my own insecurity. Anyway, I said, she goes, "Well, mine's kind of shallow. It's receiving gifts." And she kind of ducked her head. You know why? She's been around some people that have made that seem like it's not very important, not very valuable. And it's a shame. I would say this receiving gifts, and you're going to see this in the Bible, it's a pretty important deal. And it's something we need to have in our repertoire of ways that we show love to others. So I want you to walk with me through this. I'm going to tell you three stories. The first is from the Old Testament, and it shows how gifts are ways for us to show respect to people around us, people that we care about. Maybe people that we don't agree on everything with, but it's one way to show some respect. This story in Chronicles, Israel has had a king. They had King Saul, and he ended up being I'm not going to say he's worthless, but he was a pitiful king. He was caught up in his own press releases. He was arrogant. He was very prideful. He was not an honorable man. And so God decided that they needed a new king, and so circumstances worked out where David was appointed the new king, but Saul was still reigning. And Saul didn't want any competition, so he decided, well, the way to do that is I'm just going to get rid of David. And so David is now running from the armies that were under Saul. David had some soldiers that were with him because they understood his integrity. They understood what God was doing. But Saul, again, you can see, we see these power plays all the time. But Saul wanted David gone. David and his men flee Israel, and they're now kind of in, they don't have a country. Later on, God's going to install him as the official king, but until then, they're on the run. And not only is Saul and his army after him, but also the Philistines. They're wanted guys. In this particular episode, I want to read to you, they've been holed up. They're kind of blocked in by the Philistine army. Eventually, they're going to win, but at this point, it's pretty bleak. This is what it said. David remarked longingly to his men, "Oh, how I would love some of that good water from the well by the gate of Bethlehem." He was thinking, if you've ever been in leadership, it can get really lonely. And sometimes, especially when there's pressure, in this case, it was life and death pressure. You can think, man, I look back at those days, you know, when I didn't have all this pressure, when life was a lot simpler. And he was thinking about when he was a shepherd. And not that being a shepherd is an easy job, but compared to what he was doing now, leading a band of men that were being hounded everywhere they went, the stakes were a little easier back then. He was thinking, I remember those days after work, I could go back to the well near the city gate and I could have some water and relax. He goes, man, I miss those days. Listen to what it says. So the three, he had three of his top leaders in his army. So the three broke through the Philistine lines, drew some water from the well by the gate in Bethlehem, and brought it back to David. But David refused to drink it. Instead, he poured it out as an offering to the Lord. "God forbid that I would drink this," he exclaimed. "This water is as precious as the blood of these men who risked their lives to bring it to me." So David did not drink it. These are examples of the exploits of the three. What you've got is a picture here of a leader who had a team that were deeply devoted to him. They utterly respected him. David didn't say, "Please go get me some of this." You know, we're used to leaders that loved the perks of their power. And they'll do anything they can to make everyone know, I'm the big dog. David wasn't doing that at all. These guys knew it. They, on their own initiative, went and they snuck through the Philistine lines. They risked their lives to get him some water from that well. It was a symbol to show David how much they cared and respected him. And David, when he got it, he was blown away. Sometimes how people receive gifts tells us a lot about them, doesn't it? David didn't, he wasn't willing to drink it. He didn't waste it. He used it as a way to express gratitude to God and thankfulness for these men that were following him and to, in a sense, kind of re-up in being a God-honoring leader in the midst of what they were dealing with. He was blown away. It's one of these things that sometimes we get gifts that are way beyond, and if we're honest, we know, I don't deserve that. In fact, I'm embarrassed by it. That's kind of how David felt. These men weren't trying to get in good with him either. They weren't trying to do it so he would promote them or whatever. It's just a matter of utter respect and a willingness to go to whatever length to show it. So some gifts, they just show respect. Others show gratitude. This is a story. We used this last week, an earlier episode of this. Bethany is a suburb of Jerusalem. Jesus had some friends that lived in Bethany, and he visited there many times. Last week, we looked at a time where he went to the home of Martha and Mary, and is actually a home that their brother Lazarus lived in, too. We were talking then about this idea of quality time and how that works. If you missed that, I hope you'll get it. But there's another time, not long after that he goes back to Bethany. And this time he's going for another dinner, and he's going to someone else's home. A guy named Simon the leper. You can see this if you look in Mark. This story is recorded a couple of times. Well, all we know about Simon is apparently he used to have leprosy, and he was cured. Whether Jesus did it or not, we don't know, but he was known as Simon the leper. He's having this party, and Jesus is the guest of honor. And at this party, let me just read this to you. It says, a dinner was prepared in Jesus' honor. Martha, who we talked about last week, Martha and Mary, these two sisters, Martha, who was a super hostess, she had worked a meal, planned it, was doing that at Simon's house. She served, and Lazarus was among those who were with him. So Lazarus was the brother of Mary and Martha. The thing about Lazarus that's important is not long before this, Lazarus had died, and Jesus came, and he gave him his life back. It was stunning, and it had caught the whole area up. Everyone knew Lazarus. They all knew he had died. He had been dead for 3 or 4 days and came back, and Jesus brought him back to life. It was one of these remarkable miracles that Jesus did. And as a result of that, by the way, Lazarus had a price on his head. The people that wanted Jesus to be killed and silenced, they hated Lazarus being around because it really screwed up their whole thing about Jesus being evil and all. So there was a price on Lazarus' head to take him out too. Anyway, Simon's having this dinner party. Lazarus is there. Mary and Martha. It says, then Mary, Lazarus' sister, took a 12-ounce jar of expensive perfume made from the essence of nard. She anointed Jesus' feet with it, wiping his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance. This is written by John, who was there with him, one of the disciples. You read this, and you're thinking, well, that seems a little extravagant, but, you know, maybe they didn't have any Febreze. I mean, whatever you want to think about. What Mary did was extraordinary. This jar or this vial of perfume she had was, in today's money, would be worth probably $100K. It was something she had been saving for a long time. Don't know why. We're not told that. We're just told this is the most valuable thing she owned, and for whatever reason, she had been holding on to it. She may have inherited it. It may have been something she had added to periodically. It may have been something she was planning if she got married, or we don't know. We just know that it was extremely valuable. Everyone would have known it. And when Jesus was at the dinner, she decided, she felt like what she needed to do was to anoint him with that perfume. And not only that, it says that after she put it on his feet, she wiped his feet with her hair. In that culture, a woman letting her hair down publicly was not cool. If you had your hair down during the day, people know what your profession was at night. And for her to do this meant she was sacrificing her self-image to do something extraordinarily kind and generous for Jesus. She was utterly grateful to him. He was the teacher that she followed. She was the special messenger of God. Whether she knew how the Messiah was going to work or not, she knew he was uniquely God's messenger. And he had brought her brother back to life. There was nothing that she wouldn't do for him. And so she felt led to do this. Jesus led her. Goes on to say, remember, John was one of the disciples. It says, but Judas Iscariot, the disciple who would soon betray Jesus, said, that perfume was worth a year's wages. It should have been sold and the money given to the poor. Not that he cared for the poor. He was a thief. John and them found this out later. And since he was in charge of the disciples' money, he often stole some for himself. Jesus replied, leave her alone. She did this in preparation for my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. Jesus is not saying that we shouldn't spend our efforts and time and resources helping the poor. He's just saying, this is a circumstance. You don't get to criticize her. There are a couple things in this, and I won't belabor it, but Jesus says that this is preparation for my burial. He knew what was going to happen. No one else got it. No one really thought that he was going to go to Jerusalem, be arrested, and killed. They thought for sure, somehow, if he's the Messiah, we're going to set up this new regime. And, of course, he's got to be here to do it, so we can't have him die. They didn't get it. Jesus was the only one that did. Mary probably didn't get that either. She just felt, I need to do this for him. So she took that expensive perfume, put it on his feet. Sometimes what happens is that God leads us to do things and we don't know the whole story. There are times when you'll give a gift to somebody and you have no idea what the backstory is or what's going on with them and the timing of it and how what it means to them. And that seems to be what happened here with Mary. Jesus appreciates what she did. He keeps any of them from criticizing her. And it just shows this idea of not so much the extravagance of it, that's there, but gifts showing gratitude matter. And we don't have to know the whole story. When we started New Hope, Becky and the kids and I moved up here. And for us and our family, we never had enough each month to make it. I mean, on paper, it seems stupid. And I was told that not infrequently. But God, every month, God provided for us. Different ways and different circumstances. We never had extra, but we had enough to survive. And one day we got a check, an anonymous check, for $600. No one knew anything going on with it. I mean, they knew we were starting a church, but they didn't know what our finances were. But we had really wanted to take a family vacation and just hadn't been able to. We didn't have the money. And that $600 came, and it was like perfect timing. We hadn't told anybody. That person gave it. They were led to do it, and it ended up being able, we had enough to be able to do something as a family and get away for a little bit, which I hadn't been good about in the early years of our family. I remember my son, Joseph, said, "Dad, how did this happen?" And I said, "Well, you know, God led someone to do it. They wanted to invest in us and this kind of thing." Well, we need to do that for others too. So that reminded him of why we give. And anyway, there's a lot to it. But that person had no idea what that $600 did for me and my family. They didn't need to. When history wraps up, we'll know a lot more about the things that have happened. We'll know things that we did that mattered. We'll get the full story. So anyway, there are gifts that show respect, gifts that show gratitude. And this last one is gifts that show honor and appreciation. This particular story I want to tell you, you might think, well, man, he's setting us up to pass the offering bucket six times. That's not my point. It does tie in with our giving, but it goes back more to the attitude of how we do it. And it applies to every one of us. And all the, and actually the gift giving, whether it's your primary mode of showing love or the people around you, I mean, we ought to be people that are known for giving and how we do it. And this particular story has always struck me. It's someone that realized that everything she had belonged to God, and she was a steward of it. That's how we should treat everything we have. Listen to this. Jesus had been with his disciples. They'd been near the temple. And it said he sat down near the collection box in the temple and watched as the crowds dropped in their money. So it was the offering time then, and they had 13 boxes around there, and people would go and put their money in the different boxes, delineating different categories of ministry. Some of them made a big production of it. They would make sure their money was all in really loud coins, so when they drop it, everyone would hear it, and ooh and ah, and some of them had so much they'd have people carry it for them. I mean, it was a big production. Said many rich people put in large amounts. Then a poor widow came and dropped in two small coins that were, her two coins wouldn't have even shown up on the spreadsheet for the accounting office. It was tiny. Jesus called his disciples to him and said, "I tell you the truth. This poor widow has given more than all the others who are making contributions. For they gave a tiny part of their surplus, but she, poor as she is, has given everything she had to live on." The idea here is her generosity was a result of her honor and appreciation of the God that she trusted and followed. I think it's interesting, too, that Jesus, of all the times and all the circumstances, right then, that widow comes and gives her two coins. He sees it. He draws his disciples' attention to it. A couple things in that is, one is our attitude about what we have really matters. Sometimes we're stingy because we think everything I have is mine. I earned it. I own it. It's all about me. That's what our culture tells us. As followers of Jesus, I understand that even my ability to make anything, to earn anything, everything I have should belong to God himself. And I should be a manager of what I have. Instead of being a vault holding it all, what I need to do is be a conduit. Whatever he gives me, I'm ready. God, what do you want me to do with it? And that doesn't mean I have to live in utter poverty at all. It just means that I need to be free with what I have. When we do the offering here, it's part, we call it part of our worship. And it should be a way of expressing to God, God, thank you for all I have. And it's practiced so that when other times for giving come, I'm used to it. It's not an anomaly. The heart behind her giving was she just really loved God. Jesus saw that, and it's a reminder to you and me that no matter what we do, even if no one else notices, no one appreciates, no one gets it, God does. He knows what's behind. He knows the attitude behind everything I do. And Jesus celebrates this woman's heart and her gift. And I absolutely love this. We don't know her name, but one day we'll meet her. She'll probably be sitting at one of the head tables when history wraps up. There's a reminder. I had a story of this some years ago. Judy Jones used to be part of New Hope. If you had a child, when Judy was here, if you had a baby, Judy had rocked that baby in our nursery. She was a behind-the-scenes person. We did her funeral. She was the only one in her office at the Pentagon on 9/11. Plane hit, and she was killed. A remarkable lady, but the story I want to tell you happened a few years before she died. We were meeting at Hayfield High School. After the service, I was up gathering up my notes or whatever, and Judy came down, caught me in the aisle, and she goes, I want you to take, this is for the church, and she handed me a folded up check. And I don't like opening them up. I'm embarrassed about all that. I'm not sure what's the protocol. No one taught me that in seminary. Thank you is what I said. Thank you, Judy. She goes, I just want you to know that this is my inheritance, and I don't need it. I want the church to use it, whatever y'all feel is right. It was a $10,000 check. Now, for her to say I don't need it is one thing. I'm sure she could have thought of ways to spend that $10,000. I'd seen her car before. She could have upgraded the car. There's a lot of ways you can use. Most of us here would think, man, if I had an extra $10,000, I know what I'd do with it. But Judy's heart was very much like this widow. What I have, I'm going to be open-handed and free with it. With that widow, by the way, my guess is before that day was over, she may have gone home wherever she was living and found a couple bags of groceries that God had led someone to think about that widow, not knowing her whole story, and provide for her. And there it is. Could have been another one of the wealthy couples in the church decided, you know what, we need someone to help us with our kids. We just need someone that's a veteran at all this, and they may have had her come live with them and take care of the kids. I don't know. I just know that God knows, and God takes care of us. When we're generous and we express our gratitude and all that, he doesn't miss it. For those who score high on receiving gifts with the love languages, it is not about the cost of the gift. It's the thought and the attention that matters. Whether it's how you express it or not, all of us can learn to do this. It takes some time, it takes some prayer, it takes some thinking. But I wonder what would express love. I wonder what would put some wind in their sails. Every one of us have in our sphere of influence people that have this as one of their top love languages, receiving gifts. Please, please don't ever shame someone for that. And don't listen to this and think, well, that means I got to go start spending a ton of money on people. That's not the point. The gifts I showed you here, probably the top dollar value of all these things I showed you that have mattered to me might be $8. But they're priceless to me because they represent something that really matters. You and I have a capacity to speak into someone else's life and to encourage them and to love them. Let's take some time and do it. When you leave today, when you walk out, you can get one of the take-home sheets. It's on the app or website, but I'd really encourage you to spend some time and think about this whole idea of who around you, home, school, work, neighborhood, this idea of receiving gifts might be one of their top love languages. And God, would you help me know what I can do to express love to them as a way of encouraging them? Let's pray together. God, it is, first of all, it's just pretty amazing how much you love us, and you have given us, those of us that know you, you have given us so much more. than we could have ever dreamed of deserving. Now, sometimes we're arrogant and we think we are owed. But when we're honest, just you giving us freedom from our sin, you sending Jesus for us, it's hard to fathom that. But in so many ways, you've come along and given us things we needed, whether it was work, whether it was protection, whether it was insight or wisdom. You're a really good giver. Help us to imitate you and find ways to give to others so that we can be part of encouraging, helping, and loving them. Amen.